The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Well, I mean, this is a bizarre interview, but it's cool. I like it.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight we're talking music with the legendary Mem von Stein of German thrash metal gods Exhumer on the Big Pop Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Focuses on film that matters, cult, grindhouse, drive-in, independent, and underground film from the Donut Talkies through the early 90s. Tonight, we're talking music. We have with us one of the two men behind the formation and reunion of one of the most intense of all old-school thrash metal bands, period. Even among the legendary German thrash scene, alongside peers such as Creator, Destruction, and Sodom, Exhumer's incredibly wild and aggressive Possessed by Fire stood out for its unusual intensity, to the point where you thought something would collapse. The song structure, the band, your turntable, something had to give. Unfortunately, shortly after releasing this amazing record in 1986, Exhumer went through some personnel and stylistic changes and folded with the end of the 80s. But with the dawn of the retro movement, young fans and old schoolers revisiting their past, came to realize that Possessed by Fire not only stood the test of time, but it revealed itself as being one of the best thrash records ever made. 25 years on, the original band leaders of Mem von Stein on vocals and Ray Mensch on guitars are back together, and in many ways have put out what may be an even better record than Fire and Damnation, certainly a record more aggressive than bands half their age have been releasing these days. A true street-level progressive who lives his beliefs and a social worker by trade, Mem channels his frustration on what's going wrong with our society if the music is powerful, if not more so, than he was making a quarter century gone by. Join us for an entertaining and informative discussion with the one and only Mem von Stein of Exhumer, only here on Third Eye Cinema. In our first segment, we talk about the band's cult status, the road to their reunion, and knowing when King Diamond took a shit. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's Exhumer with the title track off their classic 1986 album, Possessed by Fire.
Hey, a second! on my mind. Let's just walk. Peace and rest, what I need. Forward now, I have no sleep. There's no sense of life this night. Time has come to help my.
Now, on the new record, you're listed as just doing vocals, whereas in the past, on Possessed by Fire.
My apologies, we had a slight mix up here. Well, I'll play another song from Exhumer in the meantime. This is Fallen Saint.
Oh,
It ever opens. This point. Okay, with apologies, here is the actual start of the interview.
Tonight we have with us the vocalist and former bass player for a band that's become famous in metal circles for the wild aggressiveness of their debut record, Possessed by Fire, back in 1986. Unfortunately, after releasing that record, the band changed both vocalist and style before breaking up a year or two thereafter. Now, after 25 years, both singer, lyricist, and guitarist-songwriter are back together in full fighting form and have released an album that's nearly as quirky and aggressive as the last time these two men played together. Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to present the legendary Ben von Stein of German thrash metal gods Exhumer. Ben, welcome to Third
Eye. Hey, thanks so much.
So let's start with the hard question. What happened after Possessed by Fire? Because it was really your band. You found it with Ray Mensch, but you only did that one album.
Yeah. All right. It's a pretty silly answer, actually. So we're all kids, basically, 17, 18 years old. And,
right. You
know, as kids do and friends do, we fought a lot and our egos were inflated, especially mine. It was a pretty exciting time and we all were part of a scene. And, you know, it was kind of crazy to walk downtown and see your album in the window of the record stores. And
right.
It just kind of like got to my head, or actually it got to everyone's head, and we're just kind of like started arguing about silly stuff. And one day I just said, all right, this is it. I started this band, I can start another band, it'll be just as popular, whatever. And then 2 weeks later, we all just made up again, and we're all friends and buddies. But then I kind of thought, I actually do want to do something else. And I was pretty much influenced by a lot of hardcore bands back then. And I thought, yeah, I was listening to a lot of Chrome mags and stuff like that, and I was
right.
Like, maybe I could do a band that is more like that. And so I stuck to the decision, and we got back Paul Arakaki, who used to be our first rhythm guitar player in the very first lineup
right. Of
Exhumer, and Paul is still a good friend and was a good friend back then. And I said, look, why don't you, instead of playing guitar, just strap on a bass and do the vocals, and you know, everything is okay because
right. We're
all friends and it doesn't matter. And he said, all right, I'll try that. And then, you know, he did that, and it was kind of actually worked out perfect for the style that the band then went into.
Right.
You know, they went into a more Slayer direction, and it just all worked out really well. But it was, I mean, it was really nothing. But at the time, it seemed like a big deal. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's really too bad that that happened in a lot of respects, because in retrospect, I think the big three of German thrash should have and could have easily been a big four. I mean, no disrespect to Sodom, who I love, but they were kind of
right. Looked
down upon at the time, even in underground-oriented publications and fanzines.
Sure.
Exhumer had, like, a bit of Slayer, a bit of Exodus, and a lot of something that was entirely unique that could have easily pushed you up there at Creator and Destruction as being a fan favorite.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, like, everyone since we, you know, especially after the release of the new album has been saying that and asking me the same thing. And not everyone, but most of the people that I talk
right. To.
And I guess it's in the public's mind that, you know, that would have been a possibility. And it's true. I mean, the other thing to remember is that the reason why we have the big three there, Destruction, Sodom, and
yeah.
Creator, is because they actually just stuck it out. And they
right. Went
through each of those bands, a little less Sodom, but the other two definitely went through phases that weren't
yes. All
that brilliant. And you know, but necessary. I totally respect them for what they're doing, because you know, you do what you feel is right as a musician, as an artist at the time, and if that is the direction you're going, then that's right. But the thing is that I don't know how we all, especially back then, we had wild ideas, you know.
Right.
And those guys kind of like stuck to that one formula and they really went with it. Whereas Ray and myself, you know, we even were involved in a like metal rap project in the 1990s that got signed to a major label and stuff. So we kind of like evolved in a different fashion as musicians.
Right.
And I think, I don't know if we would have stuck it out like those other three bands, really, to be quite honest with you. And the reason why I think now is working out so well for us is because we got everything out of our system. I mean, you know, I was involved in a ton of bands, and now it's like, you know, this is all I want to do. And
right.
It feels right. It is the right thing. But it only feels so good, and I can only deliver these things with a good conscience is because I did everything else. So you're right. We could have if we would have stuck to it, probably. Who knows? On the flip side of that, though, is I know that Exhumer has become somewhat of a cult favorite.
Yes.
And that's the payoff of that is like you made two records, and that's it. And then you have, I mean, seriously, we just kind of followed up with a third record after 25 years. So it's kind of almost silly. But, you know, that's the driving force of us becoming a cult band. I really believe that.
Right. And like you said, you sold your wild oats, so now you're back home, and, you know, now you're going to stick with it. So hopefully for us.
Oh, no, yeah. I mean, we're not going anywhere. We're completely entrenched in this since we said, let's do this again, which when did I reactivate? Like late 2007, early 2008.
Right.
And since then, it's been going great. You know, we did a ton of shows and, you know, all over the world now, and
right.
Things are working out great. I mean, we're not going anywhere, and we got a record deal. We can't
yes.
go anywhere.
Yeah. You carried over two of the three tracks from the Immortal in Black demo to Possessed by Fire. So why was Scanners dropped?
At the time, we thought it was the weakest track. And, you know, it's not any weaker or less exciting or whatever than the other two. But, you know, we thought it would work better with the rest of the album. And,
right.
I mean, those songs, Possessed by Fire is like that initial spark that every band has. And it's
right.
an accumulation of all the things pretty much that we worked on from the beginning till that point in time when we went into the studio and recorded it. We dropped maybe three tracks altogether. And everything else we kept, you know. So I think there are 9 tracks on Possessed by Fire. Maybe we had 12 or 13. I don't know. I don't really remember that well. But I know we dropped about three tracks. So that's why. It was just kind of random, really.
So are those tracks actually recorded, like a studio recording, they're just floating around somewhere?
Well, I can tell you one thing that we have that we're going to release one of these days, years, is nobody has this. It's a pre-production for Possessed by Fire.
Oh, really?
And it's like a demo, and only one of our friends back in Germany has it, and he's got a really good copy of that. One day,
nice.
I don't really remember what we recorded on the thing. I mean, pretty much all the tracks on Possessed by Fire, but there could be a couple more tracks on there.
Nice.
And we're keeping that for a rainy day when, you know, when we need
right.
to make a deal where we can, like, vinyl only and
right.
be like, all right, let's put out 500 of these and see what happens. Yeah.
Kind of hitting the same area. Why do you think Possessed by Fire took so many years to really get its due? Because it was mentioned here and there, and some of us recognize it for what it was at the time, but it's really
yeah.
only with the new breed of thrashers and the revival that's been going on for the past decade or so that you've begun to
yeah.
get the respect you deserve for such a killer record. And, you know, listening to it, it really holds up after all these years where a lot of the more mainstream and polished stuff from there really doesn't.
Well, that's funny that you mention it with the holding up. That's partially the reason why we re-recorded these two tracks on the new album.
Right.
But to go back to your initial question is, I think back then, I mean, there was so much good music coming out,
yes.
like especially in thrash. And I mean, I always say to people, you know, whatever is happening right now is great. And I'm truly blessed that, you know, we have another opportunity to do what we love to do. But if you grew up as a kid back then, and I assume you did,
yes.
it was like, it was almost, you know, it was kind of, you couldn't appreciate it at the time. But
right.
but looking back, it's such an insane amount of creative and good music that
totally
came
true.
Out. And, you know, nobody, you would say, all right, this week I'll pick up Possess album, then I pick up Exodus's first album, then I
right.
pick up the new Merciful Fate, you know, and all these bands sound completely different.
Right,
you
exactly.
know? And I think because there was so much output and so much good output, you know, some records fall by the wayside and some don't. I mean, that's the reality of it. However, funny enough, when Possessed by Fire was released in Germany, it really sold really well. I mean, we unloaded like 10,000 copies right off the bat. I mean,
wow.
But remember, for that time, now if you sell 10,000 of anything, you're like,
right,
king.
But back then, that was nothing, right?
That was nothing, you know. Right. I mean, it was. I mean, it made us proud, you know, because
right,
it was just, you know, that's like right, first shipment, boom, you know.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it was just a drop in the bucket, I guess. And again, there's several factors. I remember our old manager, Matthias Pearl, going to L.A. and meeting somebody from Capitol or something with the owner of Disaster Records, who we were
right,
signed to back in the day. And the guy blows the meeting because he's hungry. And, you know what I mean? Like, silly stuff like that. And I think, you know, it was just a streak of bad luck and the sheer amount of good stuff that you have to compete with. And I think the new breed of thrashers, they just have the luxury of the internet and just, you know, researching. Because I'll tell you one thing, when we play a show, it's 80% young people,
yes,
and 20% people from back in the day. That's pretty much it. I mean, you know, we just played last week, a week and a half ago, we played in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Sold out show, completely insane. We headlined the thing. It was a lot of young people. Actually, well, now there were like three generations. There were like dads with their little kids,
right,
who are like 10 or 12 now. Kids who are like 17, 18.
Right.
And the dads, you know. So it was pretty insane. It was awesome. So that's pretty much, I think that's the reason why it kind of got looked over. But however, we were actually recognized in some countries.
Oh, yes.
You know,
no,
so,
even here, you were recognized, but it was more like the culty people, like me. I would know, like, hey, this is a great record. But I would think,
right,
well, to some other people, and they're like, you know, it's not Slayer, it's not Possessed. Like, well, so, you know?
Yeah, but,
so,
but
you know,
this, you remember, we live in the country of the flavor of the month here, you know?
Right.
Like, if our bass player, Tony, he used to love bands like Bathory and Venom and stuff, and people were like, what is that? You know, people could hang with Metallica and Slayer, but they can't
right,
hang with that.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's where I was back then, too. I had the same problem as even the thrashers were like, what are you listening to? You know, cause it was like Death and Bathory and all this underground stuff.
Right.
That was like Celtic Frost. And I'm like, nah, man, you know, I'll check out this new Metallica record. And I liked it, but, yeah, it's a very different thing. It was you got culty, and then you got really culty.
Yeah.
Now, the band did continue on for another album and a subsequent demo with first Paul Arcuri and then John Cadden trying to fill the vocal chair. But, you know, like
yeah,
we mentioned, the whole dynamic had changed.
Right.
To my ears, you were pretty much irreplaceable. You know, even the music had changed fairly radically and not really
right,
for the better. It kind of moved out of thrash and was starting to go in, especially
right,
with John Cadden and stuff, in a totally different direction. So
yeah,
what really motivated you guys to get back together? Because, you know, I have to say, a new Exhumer album dropping on us was a complete shock. I mean, it was not a band I ever expected to see back together, particularly with you back on vocals.
I mean, after, you know, the 90s and when metal was becoming popular again in the late 90s, early 2000s,
right,
a lot of letters started pouring in. And also around that time, I went to the Wacken Festival as
right,
a guest. And I was a guest from Rock Art Magazine and Metal Blade in Europe and all these people that I knew from back in the day. And basically, it became kind of clear that people associated Exhumer with me. You know, I started the band. So I then also was like entertaining the Wacken one-off reunion. And that was kind of solely orchestrated by me. I was the only person who was actually really back into thrash at the time. And Ray was playing in a rock band with Ernie at the time. And he did the show as a favor to me because I said, we got to do this. And there's a lot of interest and, you know, we owe it to the fans. And I kind of was behind that. As time went on, I had like a little thrash band here in New York called Sun Descends, and those guys were doing September, this rock outfit. And then Paul came to visit in 2007. He stayed with me in Astoria. I was living in Astoria at the time. And he came over Halloween, and we hadn't seen each other since the 80s. And it was such a great time. And when he left, I was, like, kind of devastated. Him, too, because we just kind of reconnected. And, you know, it's different when you're still good friends with people that you know when you were kids, basically.
Yes.
I mean, somebody you meet when you're 35, that's cool. But, you know, Ray and I have known each other since 1983.
Wow.
And we've been hanging out since 85. So, you know, like, we met in 83. So
wow. That's
almost 30 years I know this
yep. Dude,
you know. Like, I know his family. I know his children. I mean, everything. everything. I know everything about the dude. So, again, so when Paul left, I was like, man, this sucks. And then I was, you know, he lived in Hawaii at the time. He now lives in Cali. But so I was like, man, how can we just hang out again and, you know, make this a regular thing? So I was like, at the time, I had just recorded the second full length for Sun Descends, and I was like, you know, I'm kind of pushed that envelope as far as that could go. And then I called up Ray, and I was like, look, dude, Paul was just here. We were talking about the old times, reminiscing, and I know that you're on, you know, about to leave the September thing. How about we just get the band back together? This way we all can hang out,
right,
meet regularly, tour, do things that we want to do, and, you know, record records and be a real band again. Like, you know, and it was like the best band that we all had anyway. I mean,
right,
in retrospect, it was. I mean, we were involved in bigger things, but it wasn't nearly as exciting.
Right.
So he said, all right, you know, he said, okay, let's do it. I don't have anything to do. And then that's how it got back together. And basically, we just started working on music right off the bat with Paul in Hawaii,
right,
me here in New York, and Ray in Frankfurt, and, you know, over the internet. And then, you know, and I started playing again in 2009.
Yeah, because I think you hit a lot of the next couple questions I was going to ask. You know, there might be some nuances that weren't really touched on. Because I was going to say, you know, why so many years divide? Because we're talking about like 25 years here. Did it take all that long for you guys just to reconcile? Or was it more of a feeling that the time is right now with all this retro-traditional and retro-thrash stuff going on in Europe and worldwide?
The time is right for us. Put it this way, we could have recorded a record in 2009. We recorded it in 2011. So it's always about when we're ready.
Right.
It's not really about what everybody else is doing because, I mean, at that point, when we started the band back up, I kind of knew that we're a cult band, and I was very well aware of what we can and what we can't do.
Right.
So we just take our time and do things, and then people like were saying to us, well, you recorded 8 new tracks, one from a demo that you recorded in 2009, and you re-recorded two
right.
old ones. So it's a 33-minute long record that goes blazing, and that's
exactly
what I want to hear. I want to listen to that. I don't want to listen to 8-minute songs. I don't
right.
want to, and it doesn't matter, you know. And the reason, if people look at the liner notes, we flipped singers on the tracks. One is from
right.
Rising, one is from Possessed. And we
right.
did that because we thought the fans would enjoy it because we wanted to have Paul one last time with us on a record.
Right.
So that's why we did that. But the thing is, ultimately, everything happens on our dime. And it
right.
happens, you know, in the time frame that we think is correct. When we went back out on the road, we only played 5 shows in 2009. And we could have played a lot more.
Right.
We said we want to have like a really crazy tour. We want to play on 2 continents, 5 shows, and that's all people are getting. And that's how we keep the band actually relevant, I think. And we've been doing this very consciously, you know, putting out stuff here and there and, you know, not killing it with a million shows and don't show
right.
up in New York City every 2 weeks, you know. I mean, it really is that. And we just had to postpone our North American tour from fall to spring of next year. But I think it's, again, for the better, you know. We talked about it. We just got confirmed for a show in Italy with it's a festival for Rock Hard Italy with, you know, a bunch of bands,
right.
also with Artillery. And we're going to go back out there with Artillery and do the thing that we did in South America, just in Europe. And then we're going to come to the States in early spring. The thing is like, it just has to happen. It has to feel right. It feels right to do certain things. And I think if we would go running like a freight train with the band, we would kill it and run it to the ground in real
true.
Like, in a few years.
That's
this
true.
Way, look, we started back this whole thing in 2007, 2008, and now we're in
right.
2012, and people are still talking about it.
Yep.
And people want to see the band. And like when we played in South America, that was some crazy stuff, bro. I mean, people went insane. Like, I mean, full-on singing like a soccer stadium in Argentina. It was out of control.
Nice.
And I think it's because we take our time. And, you know, we promised everybody in South America we'll come back. But we're not coming back next year. We're coming back the following year in 2014
right.
with a new album. So those are things that you kind of have to be aware of. And I think any band that really wants people to be excited about them, and especially with a touch of a cult following, you don't just, I mean, Dark Throne, you know, they do something completely different, but they would start touring. I'm sure they would do one tour and then don't tour for 5 years.
Exactly.
But, because that's what you do. You know, if you have somewhat of a cult following or a cult aura around yourself, that's what you should do. And I mean, quite honestly, I'm not 20 anymore. I don't want to be sitting in no nightliner for 6 months out of the year. I don't.
Totally understand that. And so, again, this is more of, you kind of know a lot of this, but I'll ask it anyway just to catch any nuances that we're missing. What was the deal with that showcase back in 2000, 2001, where you had announced or fans took it to mean that you'd be getting back together, and yet it wasn't until 8 years later, in 2009, that you put out that one song demo for Waking the Fire. Now, I have missed that single, so what was the story behind just putting out that one song, since it's not only on your old German label, but both Paul Arcuri and yourself are on it, listed as doing vocals?
Yeah, I mean, the idea behind Waking the Fire was like, said, all right, we have a reunion now, and we, you know, we're going to play the Five Nights of Fire tour, which we did in 2009, and we said we have to follow it up with something, at least with something new that people know that we are actually meaning business this time around.
Right.
And that's why we put that out. And it was like just on the web. And actually, we had recorded two songs. The other song is actually on the record, Devil Chaser. But we didn't put it out because we just said, you know, we want to keep it. The whole idea of metal, to me, as a kid who grew up in the 80s and as a musician who started playing in bands in 1984, is that metal had a mystique about it.
Yes,
and,
definitely.
I used to love, I mean, I grew up with punk and hardcore. I mean, some of my first records I bought in 1980, you know, like they were punk records. So, you know, there was no... Yeah, but as metal grew, you know, there was like a mystique about it. It was like, wow, Venom, you know, covers, and what are these guys doing and all that.
Right.
This, all that stuff is gone now.
Yep.
All of it is gone because people are running blogs. I mean, even us. I mean, we're constantly updating our stuff on Facebook while we're on tour. I mean, we had like a layover in Uruguay for 8 hours, and everybody did was be on their iPhones and just update shit, you know?
Right.
But the reality is that is gone. So our idea is like, how can you keep at least a little bit of that alive? And I think it's by not doing too much, not oversaturating everything, and then, yeah, just release a song, see what happens. See how people like it. Do they like it? Don't they like it? Does it help the band? What does it do for the band? Stuff like that, because you could go record 20 tracks really cheap, sound decent, and put them out for free, and that's your record.
Right.
That's another way to go, and say, you know, people donate $1, you know. We didn't want to do that, you know what I'm saying? I was like, you know, we want to keep the mystique, and if you followed a little bit on how the marketing was for Fire and Damnation, this last record, you know, we kind of built it up. We had a little trailer with it, you know, keeping it dark, keeping it kind of like precise, and that's how we want to keep doing things, really, and keep the imagination alive of how metal used to be, you know, like when I didn't know how Quorthon looked, or when I didn't know what time King Diamond took a shit, you know, like I didn't know that, you know, I was like, wow, I wonder how his house looks like, you know. And stuff like that, you know, that's the interest, that's the thing that made metal to me.
Yep.
The stuff where I was like, wow. And now nothing is like that anymore. But, I mean, I think if you keep it somewhat kind of exciting in that the way we are doing it, I hope it's exciting, then people will tune in or tune out, depending on which side you're standing.
And we're speaking with Mem von Stein of Exhumer. In our next segment, we'll be talking more in depth about the new album, Fire and Damnation, only here on Third Eye Cinema. We'll be right back. In relation to what we'll be speaking about momentarily, here is the title track off the new album. This is Fire and Damnation.
On the new record, you're listed as just doing vocals, whereas in the past, on Possessed by Fire, for example, you handled vocals and bass. So now you have Tony Schiavo handling bass duties. How does that work out for you? Do you miss playing as well as singing?
No, not at all. I was a terrible bass player. I mean, I kept it up for a good amount of years, but in retrospect, I was terrible. Tony is so good. He's a really good musician. He plays bass. He can play the drums. His first instrument was the drums. He's just an all-around good musician. And, like, it's nice to have a bottom end, you know, like where just stuff is flying. And, like, I can mess up all I want on vocals. I know that bottom end never drops, you know.
Right.
It doesn't drop out. Like, that's what you're looking for. That's what you want. That's what creates power. Because now I can run around like an insane person, and people can enjoy watching me making a dipshit out of myself. And you know, like that's what a show is, really.
Right.
Like people need to be entertained. And I mean, we take that very serious. So it's imperative to have a good bass player who can carry this stuff and actually play the bass. It's not like, I mean, I love Slayer, don't get me wrong. I love Exodus, but none of those bands, Exodus a little more maybe these days with Jack around, but you know, and Slayer, who cares what the bass does?
Exactly.
So, but it's nice to have it. It's nice to know it's there. It's nice to, like, just me strumming on the E string. You know?
Right.
I mean, he actually does play an instrument, and it really helps out so much, and I just enjoy it, and that's a much better deal for everybody. Trust me.
Yeah. You kind of touched on these as well, but again, I'll ask them. You actually do two nods to the past on Fire and Damnation. First, you have a fairly strong cover of Fall and Saint, where Paul are accused in the vocals. And I thought that Paul had left the band by the time you put the album together. So what did you do, just mail him the stuff over?
We threw him, yeah, we sent him the tracks, and he went into the studio and just threw the vocals on there.
Right, and
so,
then
yeah.
You covered on flipping the table.
I dare you.
Covered "I Dare You" off "Rising from the Sea." So, did you personally choose that particular song, or was it more of like a group consensus thing? Like, this might be the strongest track on that album, because, like I was trying to hint at before, while I love the cover art, that record really doesn't hold up as well as "Possessed by Fire" does. There's something about the sound that was just very different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've been playing. Well, I mean, we had the luxury of actually picking the songs based on crowd favorites and how we and what we like to play.
Right.
And we love to play "I Dare You" because it's really brutal. So,
right. So
we said, yeah, that's the one. I mean, it was almost a no-brainer. I said,
okay. Yeah,
we're just going to do this, and everybody said, yeah, sure. You know, I mean, that was just we played around with "Rising from the Sea" in the rehearsal room and, you know, during practice, but we never really played it live. "Decimation" was another song we did off of "Rising," and we still have we always start with "Winds of Death." The live set always starts with "Winds of Death," and that's just not a song you just want to throw on a record.
Right.
You know, I mean, we don't re-record "Possessed by Fire" the song either. You know,
right?
Like, that's just silly, and so. So we said, you know, "I Dare You" is it's a thumping song. It really, really is a brutal song, and it just fits really well with the rest of the material. And that's
true.
It was just, we didn't have to even debate.
Now,
and
you know,
"Fall and Saint" is good.
"Fall and Saint" is great, but you know, I have to say that you don't sound the same vocally after all these years, but I'd be a bit surprised if you did, you know, if you pulled like a John Cyrus and sounded exactly the same after 25 years, especially the way you did vocals, because, you know, you were like Paul Bailoff on crack or something. It might have been some of the wildest vocals in thrash. But, you know, that being said, both you and Ray sound extremely youthful and aggressive for guys that were recording when I was in my early teens. I'm very impressed by this.
Well, I mean, that was the whole idea, was like, let's not make a fool out of ourselves. Let's not try to emulate in a sounding fashion, but more as
in the spirit of
it all, you know.
Exactly.
And we're just the people who, we're the same people, just, you know. I mean, we grew up, and now, you know, we went through all these changes. But the initial sparks or the initial feeling is still, I mean, put it this way. I'm in my 40s. Do I run around and bust people in the face? Obviously not, you know. But do I feel aggressive a lot of times? Yes. So I take this, and I put it in the music. And that hasn't changed back from when we were kids. You know,
we'd
just get into a lot more trouble back then. But you
would,
you know, because you were a kid. Now you go to jail. So, so instead of going to jail, I take all that frustration or whatever it is. I still have that in me, and so does Ray. And so you take that and you put it in your music, and then that's what it is. And that's really, I think, that kind of separates the boys from the men. And, you know, and a lot of people are like, wow, you know, you guys come back and you do this record and you have all this energy and, you know, but all these other bands come out, like, you know, like maybe younger bands from, and there's just something missing. And it's like, you know, the thing is, all these bands can play well, they have good arrangements, all that is fine. But you can't, you can't put on a bullet belt, play riffs like 1986 and be 1980 from that time. You just can't. So that's the difference. Like, I am that. We are that. You are that.
Right.
And I'm not knocking the new breed of thrash metal.
No,
I love Independent. I mean, they're partially the reason why we're back.
Exactly.
And accept it this way. There's no hate whatsoever. I wish everybody is successful. But
right.
That one element that people are looking for, you can't replicate that. You can't just, you know, you can't buy that anywhere. So I think that's the thing that makes us who we are. And, you know, when Ray plays guitar, he plays it with authority. When I go on stage and I start barking at people,
right.
People buy it. You know, they're like,
right.
Holy shit, this dude means business. I mean, it's because that aggression is not an act. That's when I go on there and I do that for that hour or whatever, that's who I am at that moment. When I get off stage, I'm a really nice person. You can talk to me. I'm very, very open and, like, you know, very easygoing. But that hour on stage, I'm going to rip people's heads off. And, I mean, that's how I feel. And I think you can't just do that by making a sour face or, you know, or playing the riffs right. It's something either you have it or you don't. And, I mean, again, I bring a lot of that feeling with me. I mean, I know what it is. I know how what the time was. All that lives in all of us who are there. So, you know, that's that is actually, I think, a deciding factor in what is happening.
I think you hit the nail right on the head, because that's what it is. I mean, you're not going through the motions like some of these bands will do when they get back together. And you've also, like you said, you're not trying to cop to, oh, look, I'm still 16 again. Well, of course, we're not. None of us are. But nonetheless, you're coming through with this, you know, this energy and aggression. It's like, whoa, holy shit. You know, what is this?
Yeah, I'm
and
glad
you didn't really hear that.
Yeah, I think there were a few reviews that said, yeah, nobody needs this band. But I tell you what, 98% of all the reviews out there that I've seen and read, they all said very similar things, and they were all very surprised that we were able to pull this one off. They were like,
exactly.
Nobody kind of could put their finger into on it, and they were like, how did these guys do it? It's like kind of strange. And, you know, we planned this record very carefully. We took off an entire year from playing. The whole idea of, like, how we recorded, what we want to do, you know, how we craft the songs. You know, we actually finished writing everything in the practice room. And that's how we used to do it. And that's how we said, you know, we're going to sound like an organic band. And we're going to do it like we back when we were kids. And we went to Germany in our rehearsal space, and we played every day, 8 hours. Like, it was like going to work. And and that's how that record came to be. And then we took that into the studio. And that's how that record, that's why that record sounds the way it does. And that's why they were able to capture that energy.
Yeah. And, you know, in some ways, I actually think the riffing improved a bit. You know, maybe it's just the newness of the record or the more modern technology beefing up the guitar tone. But this is some really high-powered, aggressive stuff, especially on the first half of the record. I mean, you don't get guys that are in, you know, their mid to late 40s bashing out riffs like you hear on Fire and Damnation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, well, we sat down and we said, what kind of record do we want to listen to? None of us like long songs. None of us like – we just like – look – you put on Bounded by Blood, you put on Raining Blood, you put on everything has blood in it.
I was going to say everything has blood in it.
Yeah. And you know, you put any of those records on, there's no nonsense, there's no 10-minute song, there's no nothing.
Right.
It goes right to the meat and it's just like bang in your face. And that's what we said we want to do. And we didn't care. I mean, people were like, well, because we bankrolled the record. We said, we're going to record this thing without any input from anybody else other than ours.
Right.
And Bazemar, our producer, we told him, you know, we love your bands that you work with, but we don't want any of your ideas. Just record the record and get the performances out of the musicians. And he said, okay, that's what I'll do. And because we wanted to have a raw record. And And people were like, ah, maybe, you know, you just sank a bunch of thousands of euros. And we're like, nope, it's going to work out. Yep. And then we started shopping it, and the reaction was pretty much the same all around. Oh, this is a good record. And then, you know, we kind of like, we're like, yeah, it's pretty good. So you know, we were able to negotiate a deal with a label that we wanted, and everything worked out. But it was very carefully planned. And
right.
It was very much in the vein of, you know what, even if this doesn't work out, we still did
right.
what we wanted to do.
And, right.
You know, so that's why we were so sure of ourselves, you know, and of the project, you know.
And what I find particularly surprising here is that I pulled out Possessed by Fire and played it a few times alongside Fire and Damnation. And while I still love that old record, I find myself playing the new one more. Now, again, I don't know if it's just that I've been playing these songs for so many years, but this one's definitely been getting more spins. I think I've heard it over 20 times already. You know,
It's a short record, A.
Yeah, that's one thing.
I think you said it, you know. I mean, you've been listening to Possessed by Fire since 1986. This
right.
is just new, and it's like, and again, we wanted to have that effect that you just described. It's like, you know, this is so good, I'm just going to, you know, leave it in rotation. And,
exactly.
Know,
it stops and I start it again.
Yeah, and that's something that we wanted. We wanted people to say, you know, this shit is really, really exciting, and, you know, we feel excited. We feel excited about the material, and it should translate to other people listen to it, you know.
Right.
And I think it did. I mean, really, I said this in many interviews over the past few months. I said, we really do this band for the fans, for the people who
right.
want to listen to it. And we do it on our terms, but we do it with the fans in mind. So
right.
it's like, this is the album that we want to listen to. We are pretty much convinced this is the album that our fans want to listen to.
Right.
And thus far, that formula has not proved us wrong. We kind of know our fans. We kind of know what they like.
Right.
Because after all this time, you had enough time to sit on your butt and analyze what people like. And then it becomes a feeling, and then that feeling becomes, all right, this is right. This is what
right.
we're going to do, and this is what we're going
to
do.
What's changed to my ears is that the earlier material is so wild, the music sounds like it's about to collapse. You know, it's right on the edge, like
right.
early Creator. But
right.
the new material is much tighter. It's like the sound is very beefed up and in your face. And, you know, you don't know me, but I'm generally the last person to say something produced recently sounds better than something produced 20 or 30 years ago. Because, you know, normally I find modern production
right.
techniques and software to be kind of flat and generic, and it's saturated in mids. Overall, it just sounds like crap to me. But in your case, I don't know if, you know, Possessed by Fire is just overdue for a good remaster or what, but the new record is much more immediate. You know, there's a distance to the older material that you're not getting here. It's just relentless.
Well, but I tell you something. I mean, recording the record was kind of like pretty quick. I mean,
right.
it wasn't quick, but it felt like it went fast. But mixing this thing took 3 months. So, I mean, there was a lot of discussion that went into this mix, a lot. I mean, there was a ton of back and forth and a lot of, like, nasty emails. So,
wow.
So, I mean, our production team almost lost their minds with us.
Wow.
And they're like, wow, you guys, compared to the amount of work that they have to put in and what we gave them as in compensation, it's a joke, you know. I mean, you're talking about, like, what you would give the guy who produces Sneep, you know, in
right.
terms of money. But, you know, that's how much time we got out of Waldemar and his production team, you know,
wow.
because we just said, nope, we don't want – I mean, there was so much debate about the sound. But in the end, because the album is now recognized for what it is,
right.
he is totally cool with it, and everybody is very happy because – you know, we were right to say nope, nope, nope.
Yeah.
It was just back and forth for 3 months
and
until,
you know,
we found a mix that we all agreed on.
And, you know, one of the only issues I have with this album, if I have any at all, is that, it,
yeah.
like you had mentioned, it's like Rain and Blood. It's so short. You know, it never wears out its welcome that way, but it's just like, that's it? Okay, I got to play it again. You know, what else is going to sound
mm-hmm.
like this?
I tell you one thing. I mean, I know that for a fact. We won't have more than 10 songs on the next record. It might be a little longer album. But it won't. We'll never go past 35, 36 minutes. We just don't want to. It's just something that I'm not into. I don't. Look.
Well, you know what that is? It's the punk influence.
Yes,
that's the punk
influence. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, thrash has that. And they're like,
yes,
people are like, yeah, they're like, wow, now I have to write this opus. You're not an opus,
no,
bro. You know, like, this is not like, you
it's
know, I mean, it's not the same thing. Don't get it twisted. Because I listen to all kinds of, like, I love, like, bands like High on Fire and The Sword. I love the band Ghost. I love all kinds of different music, right?
Right.
I don't expect Ghost now all of a sudden to throw in thrash riffs.
Right.
Just to mix it up. I don't want them to do that. I want them to do exactly what they're doing. And and that's why when thrash bands started playing like 10-minute songs, I'm like,
right.
I mean, listen to Machine Head. It's ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not
a
thrash band. But
you know what it is? They're all going by the Metallica template. They want to do 7- and 12-minute songs. And, you know, Metallica was a great band once upon a time, but they're not
Yeah,
exactly. They're not like any other thrash band. Other thrash bands, it came in, it had the punk influence, it had the new wave of British heavy metal influence, and that was it. It came in and beat your head, and it was done, you know?
Yeah. Right. That's what thrash is. I mean, that's what my understanding of it was. And I grew up in Europe. I was part of the new wave of British heavy metal when it came out, like in terms of getting stuff and buying records. I mean, I bought Iron Maiden Killers the day it was released, you know,
right.
Like, I mean, stuff like that. I mean, I went to Saxon in 1981 and like, you know, I mean, very well aware. That was part of my upbringing. But on the other end of the reason why I got into thrash was like, it didn't have like hokey costumes.
Right.
And it had this punk attitude and the aggression of punk and hardcore. I was like, this is my music. This is what I want
to
do.
I gravitated right to it. It was the same
thing. I was like, I love metal and I love punk and hardcore. And this is the combination that I was waiting for. Sign me up.
Exactly.
You know? So that's how that whole thing went down. And I mean, when people start mixing up, not even mixing, I don't mind mixing. What I don't like is misunderstanding what the initial thing is what because DRI then, you know, went from like a more hardcore feel to a metal crossover feel, you know.
Exactly.
I didn't mind that. That's a mixing thing. You know, you can do that. But I just don't like, when I want to listen to Rush, I'll listen to Rush. How about that?
Right. That works. So do you have material lined up for a second album, or was this everything you put together is on the record?
We got a few riffs. We will actually start writing pretty soon and then complete writing next year after the summer.
Right.
So we got, it's on a level now where we know pretty much what's going to happen in the next 18 months. We know what's going to happen. So it's pretty much that now.
So
we're going to go back out in the fall to Europe. Then we're going to come back, hang out for a while, go back out in the U.S., North America in the spring. Then we're going to do festivals in Europe in 2013 and then finish writing the record.
Right.
The new album will come out spring of 2014.
Okay.
You're listening to Third Eye Cinema with Nem von Stein of Exhumer. Coming up next, we'll talk about what makes German thrash special, how the internet has changed and brought back the metal scene, and Mexico and logistics of rehearsing cross-continentally. Only here on we
about half the band right now is new. I understand that Tony Shallow is a friend of yours, and that HK actually teaches guitar. Because, you know, that's quite a change from the old criticisms that thrash acts, especially the German thrash acts, were supposed to be sloppy players. You know, you got a guy that's a guitar teacher.
He's not that sloppy, no. He's a guitar player. He's a guitar teacher. And he's very traditional. Like, you know, he teaches people how to play blues. His scales are impeccable. He does most of the lead work. Ray still plays a lot of leads, but you know, we just mix it up real nice. And Matthias, our drummer, we found him through our old manager. He actually recorded a video clip of playing Waking the Fire.
Right.
And we saw the clip and we're like, all right, this is our guy. And, I mean, he's great. Besides the fact that he weighs almost as much as Gene Hoagland, he plays as good. I mean, not as good, but, like, let's say he plays with as much authority as Gene does. So,
right.
You know. And, yeah, we couldn't be happier, you know. I mean, he's not as good as Gene. Nobody is. But, you know.
And that was before Triggers, and that was before any of that stuff. So, you know, Gene is still.
Yep. So that's a different story. But, yes, we couldn't be happier with this lineup. It's really strong. We've been in the same lineup since 2010 at this point.
Right. So while we're on this topic, why do you think it is that German thrash sounds so very different from its U.S. counterpart or any other countries for that matter? Because there's a particular aggression and a loose, wild feel to it. That market is special and unique, kind of like Norwegian black metal. You know, other countries can't really seem to match up that style.
Right.
It's like thrash in its purest form. So what do you think
it is? Well, I mean, the problem is, first of all, I get really upset when I see documentaries on thrash or when I see Hit Paraders, whatever, some mainstream magazine saying thrash metal. And then it's thrash metal on the cover. And then you have Exodus, Slayer, Megadeth,
Anthrax.
Metallica, and Anthrax. And it's like, oh, that's it? Somebody completely forgot thrash metal only existed in the U.S.?
Exactly.
No. The reason why it took on its own life in Germany, and I think a lot of people will verify that, is that at the time when we were growing up in Germany, when you were a metalhead, you were like a punk rocker in 1977. People kind of looked down upon you. Society, I mean, you got to remember, now everybody's got tattoos, 20 earrings, like whatever, you know. People are like, I'm going to have sex right now, whatever, I don't care. You know what I mean? Back then, it wasn't like that.
Right,
you know,
that's true.
You got to remember, Germany was bombed to pieces, Second World War, and in the 1980s, a lot of, like, old stuff was still, like, you know, people were trying to be proper, be like, and you run around as a metalhead, you were able to express your discontent with whatever it was by the way you looked. And, I mean, thrashers had a great look. They were like the punk rockers of metal.
Right.
You know, high-top sneakers, torn off jeans, bullet belt, metal shirt, that's it. You know, cut sleeve. That's not a pleasant sight in 1986 for some German to look at. You know, it was like maybe in the 60s. You know,
it wasn't here either. I got the same shit.
See? So, you know what I'm talking about. And
exactly.
So you combine that with also, back then, you got to remember, there was no East Germany. I mean, East Germany was East Germany, and we grew up in West Germany. So the country was much smaller. Everything was just really kind of like, there's a lot of tension.
Right.
So just like you mentioned the Norwegian black metal, it just happened to be the right place for this kind of music, you know.
Right.
It's almost like, you know, what we have here now and have had, like New York hardcore or Seattle sub pop or, you know, the Georgia Athens sound, you know, like with R.E.M. and all that stuff. Like, you had the Bay Area for thrash and then you had Germany for thrash, you know.
Right.
Like, those were the two areas where that type of music just worked really well.
Right.
And people could identify with it and just kind of, like, go with it. And I think people don't realize how tight things were back then, you know. It was just a different kind of time and really.
Yeah.
And then when the whole thing got overexposed and metal just became a joke, unfortunately, thrash was thrown in the bucket and they're like, all right, you know, this is part of metal. This is going to happen as well, you know. But really, in the beginning, it wasn't anything like that. I mean, we used to run around and be like, oh, look at these dudes. They like rat. Let's beat them up, you know?
I know.
You
and all the posers.
That.
I mean, it's like
yeah. I mean, we're like, I mean, that was some serious business.
Oh yeah.
You know, but secretly we would admire how they would be able to play their guitars so well.
Right.
You know, they're like, wow, these guys can play some scales, huh? Yeah, but they suck.
So I'm looking through this. I'm like, geez, we really kind of covered a lot of this stuff already. But again, I'll put this out there. What do you feel about the impact of the internet on the metal revival? Because when I was listening to music like this, like you had mentioned, it was quite obscure. You know, there weren't a lot of places you could hear it being played or where it was discussed in print or where it was sold. I mean, it was like the days of tape trading and snail mail pen pals, and everything
right.
was very cult. Bands had a lot of mystery to them. You know, you couldn't even find out how many records some bands had put out. You know, just like you'd find one of them and it's like, you know, that might have been it, or they might have had six other records. You didn't know.
Right. No, you're right. Yeah.
So how do you think it really changed beyond losing that feel, that cultiness to it?
I mean, I think the biggest impact it has is that it gives the opportunity for people who are interested and curious to use it as a tool and just really find out. I mean, why do you think Bathory's first album, the Yellow Goat, goes for this much money? It's because
exactly.
people read about it. They didn't pick it up back then, and they're like, you know, it's $600 item on eBay now. But
the hell, if you saw
that,
it, you wouldn't want to pick it up. It's yellow.
Yeah, right. I know. It was like, oh, this shit. But the thing is it's a great tool for people to get, you know, if they're interested, to find out about stuff, about history. And I mean, we played Thrasho, the Mayo Festival in 2009, brother. I mean, we were floored. Those kids, I mean, they sang every single line of every song that we played. They came there with Germany flags. They looked like us, like we looked when we were 16. And it wasn't hokey. It was like, I mean, it felt right because, I mean, it was their music. It's their music now. And they live that music like we used to live it. And I can't knock them. I can't say anything because they're truly into it. I mean, we have people diving off the 8-foot-high balcony into the crowd. I'm like, these dudes are nuts, like we were nuts, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's the greatest thing that the internet did, because without it, I don't think these kids would know what's going on.
No.
Or would want. That's great, you know? The flip side of it, this is what I told you earlier, is that some of that mystique
exactly.
and all
mystery
that
is gone.
Is gone. Like, there's
but,
nothing
but
really...
But like you were saying, it's like, it's very easy to find even the smallest details on this stuff, and you're actually getting a lot of young kids that are well-versed in bands that even I didn't hear of back then, and I was voracious with this crap.
Absolutely,
yet,
yeah.
You know,
I mean, they asked me about bands that supposedly grew up 20 miles away from where I grew up, and I never heard of them. It's like, wow, really? They're like, yeah, man. I'm like, okay, if you say so. But it's great. I think whenever something like this happens, you have to treat it with respect and you have to be thankful. I'm grateful because, again, they put us on the map. I mean, all these dudes who now have Exhumer tattoos and post them online, that's what made the band so cult.
Yep.
You know?
That's true.
Like, I mean, start from the guy from Violator to Mike from Firstless Death and, like, all these
right.
dudes were like, wow. I mean, the first time I saw somebody tattooed with the mask on, I was like, is this for real? Did he paint that on his arm? And, like, no, he's got a I mean, it's not – we're not in Slayer, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, everybody's got 15 million Slayer tattooed. You
and
know, that's crazy shit.
All over the place that, it, you know, they really get it. Like, you know, you got Necromantia, I think it's from Sweden or Norway, and you got
– yeah.
You know, down in Colombia, you got Witch Trap, and you got Best of Holocaust. I mean, you know, some of these guys, it's like you could not tell, except for maybe the production techniques and looking at the date on a record, that it wasn't made back then.
I know. It's scary.
You know? So
scary.
What happened in 2010 with Mexico? Because you were pretty apologetic about it and made sure to let fans know on your Metal Blade page that you were going to make up for it this year, which I'm sure you did with your recent tour down there.
Oh, yeah. It was great. Well, I mean, basically, in most, like, even in Brazil, too, local promoters, they, you know, you have some people who do things right and others who don't do things right. That's pretty much it.
Okay.
And then the fans suffer.
Right.
And we were all ready to go. Everything was booked. But we're like, are we going to go there as tourists? Or, I mean, we're coming there with stuff. And, like, do we have working visas? So basically what those guys did back then was they sold the show to the fans but didn't really come through with all the paperwork that needed to be done professionally.
Okay.
And then we just didn't board the plane. We said,
gotcha.
You can't do that, you know, because I don't want to talk to Mexican customs about guitar cases and merchandise. You know?
Totally understood.
But then this time around, our management, they've been working with the same dudes down there for a while now, and they're like, yeah, we'll send you down there, no problem. And everything worked out just fine. They did have some, we ended up in the middle of a quarrel of two local promoters again, but we didn't get stranded or anything, and, whatever. We made it back. It was cool. But when we went to South America, everything was perfect. Everything. There was, not a problem. So Mexico remains a little bit of an adventure, but yeah, definitely. And I would go back there again, just not as readily as I would go back to South America.
Now, you've been living in New York for some time. Did this pose any logistical difficulties with, the rest of the band still situated in Germany? Or was it just you did everything over the internet and then eventually you flew over there and, recorded your stuff?
Well, the way we do things is, I think with, a lot of bigger bands do, too. None of the Slayer guys live in the same vicinity and they rehearse every week. And nor does anybody really.
Right.
So basically we said, we have a practice room, our rehearsal space is in Germany, and we all meet in Germany before we go on a tour or before we record a record and do work on the project, whatever the project is. If it's a live set, then we work on the live set. We meet. Now, this time around, one of the conditions for us to go to Mexico was they had to rent studio for us for 3 days.
Okay.
And they did. We just need some time to rehearse. And because we were just coming off of the record, everything was kind of fresh anyway.
Right.
But usually that's how we do it. I mean, that's how most bands do. They rent some space and they get together and work on, I call it a project, whether it's a record or a tour. And then, you get into the groove. And we've been doing this for a long time. So it takes a couple of days. And then, you just make sure the band sound as a band, as a unit. And then you go out and do whatever you need to do. So logistically is not as complicated. And when I write lyrics for new songs, Ray sends me the stuff over. I have it, within seconds, and I start writing. And I usually write stuff. I already have it in my mind. I have it in my head, so it's right there. So it really doesn't matter. 25 years ago, it would have been a problem, but not today.
You listen to Third Eye Cinema with Mem Von Stein from Exhumer. We're here on the Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Addresses what we'll be discussing in our next segment, where we get political, take on Horatio Alger, and discuss living your beliefs, how media creates culture, and how black metal kids still listen to their mom and being a better person. This is A New Morality.
So without getting too deep on the subject with you, I understand you're also rather progressive in your views. So what do you think is going on in today's society with this disturbing trend of rising conservatism that eschews logic and compassion in favor of a Machiavellian realpolitik that borders on fascism?
I think inherently the problem with the country is that you have people who are curious and who are interested and who check in into every view. And then you have people who are comfortable with sound bites.
Right.
So it's easy to sell to somebody a sound bite that sounds good on the surface. It's almost like Nazi Germany. The stuff that they fed to the public, they were like these sound bites, like, dude, you're going to have some work. Everybody's
right.
going to do great. And things are going to roll well, and you know, and you just have to be of this certain character, or
right.
you have to buy into this ideology, and then everything is hunky-dory, and, you know, we get together, and everything is cool. And if you have a lot of people, if you have a certain amount of people who are okay with that, then it's easy to make the pitch. I mean, I was listening to NPR the day about how they try to fry Eric Holder. And it's, you know, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I don't, but, you know, get informed. See,
yeah.
listen to these dudes and listen to the other dudes. And
right.
I think it's real easy to turn into Fox News and just have them just give you the shit. Because it's wrapped up as, it, you see, it's entertainment is what it boils down to. It's not news. I mean, you look at, I mean, I watch the BBC for news. If I want to,
oh, yeah.
I want to know what's going on, I'll turn on the BBC because they just say, this is what's going on, like it or not, whatever. Nobody
right.
who's selling you any kind of weird anything. There's
right.
no, oh, yeah, there was a bear who ate the kid and you know what I mean? Like in the middle of Syria, bombs, oh, yeah, and then mom's using this product, but she should have used that product. Like, no. You, if you want to watch news, watch that. Because they'll
right.
just say, all right, this is what happened, and this is what happened, and it's all along the same lines. It's news.
Very
it's real,
true.
I mean, stuff that's actually worth mentioning.
It's
and,
fascinating that you mentioned that, because that's exactly what I do. I'll sit there and watch the BBC World News, because, like you said, it's just they present the facts. You know, there's nothing – they're not selling you a package of what amounts to propaganda. And, again, you hit the nail on the head mentioning, you know, that's how they did things in Nazi Germany, because that's what that is. They are selling
Absolutely.
You a bill of goods, and people are just saying, eh, it's easy for me. What the hell? I like these ideas. I like what they're saying to me that I'm going to get a job back, and, oh, yeah, you know, it's all Obama's fault or whatever, and or, you know, the other side, oh, it's all, you know, Romney's fault or whatever, and that's it.
Right.
You just buy a bill of goods. Nobody's actually going in and saying, this is right, this is wrong. Wait a minute on this one. You know, there's no
right.
research, I guess. Nobody's got time for it.
Well, and people are comfortable. And, I mean, don't get me wrong. I love this country. You know, I became an American citizen, everything, you know. I mean, I love the experiment. To me, it's always, I call it the experiment. You know, I was born in Turkey. They went through a similar experiment, you know, after World War One.
Right.
And so, I there's so much stuff that I love about the States, and especially about New York. So there's nothing there. I don't say any of this because of envy or hate or anything, you know. I mean,
right.
And again, I mean, there are a lot of good things in this country and a lot of things that I admire and I'm proud to be here, you know.
Right.
On the flip side, it makes me cringe when I see ignorance. And it makes
yes.
me cringe if I see it in North Korea, or it makes me cringe when I see it in my backyard, because it's just
right.
kind of like it's sad. It makes me sad. And, like, you know, I want people to know what is what, and I don't buy. And, I mean, I'm not saying that everything that the left is throwing out is right, or
no,
whatever
no.
the right is throwing out is wrong. I'm not saying that. But if you want to have somewhat of an opinion, just don't buy the soundbite. Just check into it, whatever it is. I mean, it's funny because then you turn around and you've got people, you know, they'll investigate what vacuum cleaner is the best one. They'll check on that stuff for like 8 hours. Not
right.
a problem. You know, they'll just like, wow, I've done my research. I bought this one. This one is better than the other one. Well, if you do that with your vacuum, can't you do that with your political ideas? Or,
exactly.
I mean, because guess what? Guess what? The whole thing about some rich dude and the money trickling down from the rich guy, and like, that's all nonsense, brother.
It is.
You know, that dude only has one person in mind, himself.
Exactly.
You know, that, so it's fascinating to me that in this country, it's the only, we're the only country here in the modern world where people want to be like the rich guys and promote the rich dudes, thinking that they then, in turn, one day become wealthy themselves.
Yep.
By association. Dude, this is nonsense. Like,
isn't that fascinating? I've been railing against that for years. I used to have arguments with my folks about that because, you know, they were buying into this Horatio Alger myth that, you know, you just come here and somehow you're going to become rich and someday you'll be a millionaire, so you better protect their investments. And that's not the way it works. You know,
no,
if you're a stock clerk, you might get promoted to be head stock clerk, but you're not going to be a CEO. It doesn't happen that way.
No, because the CEO makes sure that you will not be that.
Right, exactly.
You know? And by feeding all these ideas, and that's why I get really people from socioeconomic brackets that should not be voting for Republicans vote for Republicans.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are
it
you doing
baffles
this?
Me. It's like you're living in a trailer park. Why are you voting
yep.
for
him? I mean, why? Like, there's just, these guys are your enemies because guess what? They're not going to, they're the first ones who will cut off any kind of welfare that you're receiving in
right.
a trailer park. I mean, like, guess what? You just voted for the guy who's going to, you know, pull the plug on your electricity.
That's what drives me nuts. It's like, can't you see? I mean, make up your mind whether you want to go this way or that way, or you're in this bracket, you want to defend these people, you want that bracket, you want to defend those people. But why are you going to go and say, I'm going to beat up anybody that says something bad about, you know, Simon Legree when you're Uncle Tom? I mean, is that kind of a thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's baffling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's baffling. So that's my pitch on politics. That's all you got to get from me.
Good enough. Now, your social awareness fascinates me. You know, that's very 80s thrash and more or less unheard of these days. Now, I understand Vermin of the Sky, for example, is about the Fukushima reactor meltdown and concerns about the radioactive fallout since.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you're also a social worker by trade and have worked with the homeless and mentally ill. Now, this sort of compassion and concern for the welfare of others is very unlike what people tend to associate with metal, particularly nowadays after black metal and death metal have influenced so much of the culture. So why do you think that is? You know, does media really create culture rather than merely reflect it? Because if so, we're in real trouble.
So.
Fox News and torture porn and all this other stuff, reality TV.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that to me, those black metal dudes – I mean, we played with a black metal band in Mexico for two nights or three, I don't remember. And they're just the nicest dudes. And, like, you know, I mean, I think it's all cliche, really. I mean, I might be a cliche, too, because, I you know, I'm fairly left. I mean, like, or not left. I'm just fairly, you know, for people. You know,
right.
I want people to be okay.
Right.
And that's maybe my punk rock roots or whatever. Call it whatever you want. But the thing is like, I went to college pretty late in the game. I was like 30, 31, and then what am I going to do? What am I going to study? So I chose social work, you know, because I could identify with that. And basically, I stuck to it. It's just something that, am I still an aggressive person? Oh, yeah. You know, I'm super aggressive, and, you know, but why wouldn't I be able to help somebody out? Or why wouldn't I be interested in something that promotes everybody's welfare?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like silly, right? And I mean, the whole death metal, black metal thing, I mean, when you sit down with those dudes, any of them, first of all, I always say, you know what, don't front in front of your girlfriend or wife and in front of your wife. Just don't front. Because guess what? You know, they'll chew you out. What, you're going to punch your girlfriend or your wife in the face? No, you're not. And you're going to be hard in front of your mom? No, you're not.
Right.
So at the end of the day, you can put as much paint on your face or talk about torture, killing, whatever, in your lyrics. You're just the same dude who is in front of his mom, and mom says, shut the hell up, eat your food, and that's what you're going to do. That's the reality. I mean, I know it, and trust me, I know some pretty bad people, like in my life. I've met some pretty bad people. And at the end of the day, when they're in front of their mother, everybody shuts up and eats the food, and, you know, okay, mom, okay. So, you know what I mean? At the end of the day, when you come to realize that, and I did, I'm like, this is all bullshit. Like, I don't need this. I'm going to do whatever I want, you know? And like I said, when I go on stage and we rip it for an hour, that's who I am for that hour. When I get off on stage, I'm off the stage, I'm a real nice person. I mean, I started martial arts for 13 years, and I'm still practicing. I can pretty much handle my own, no problem. You know, I have no fear about nothing. But, you know, I just don't need to prove it to anyone, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And if your topic is about ripping babies, all right. I'd rather, I mean, in Vermin of the Sky, don't get me wrong, I write lyrics in a fashion, they're still metal. Everything is still metal. But there's a subtext to, or at least in my head, I know where it comes from. I like doing it that way because that's interesting to me. You know, the song Devil Chaser is about, watch this documentary on this guy who used to be in the military, and he was instrumental in the whole Darfur episode.
Right.
His photos, they were published in the New York Times, and that got the public actually talking about what's happening in Darfur. That's why I wrote that song, Devil Chaser. Stuff like that. I mean, it's still metal. It sounds metal,
and
but
even so,
it comes
I'm not
from a different place. You know?
Exactly, and I'm not even knocking people for writing lyrics and having atmospheres and dressing up. And I like that stuff. You know, there's no problem.
Do whatever
with that.
You want.
But what I'm saying is, there's this kind of thing where people, or maybe it's just the kids or what, people are carrying this crap around, like, you know, whatever the music they're listening to, or the TV they're watching, or the movies they're watching, or their friends. And they're going around, and what they're changing. I mean, it's like everybody's all of a sudden very selfish and doesn't give a damn about nobody else. And it's like, why is this? You know, it doesn't make you cool or metal to say, I don't give a shit about anybody else. You know, if you get my way, I'm going to stab you in the gut. Well, why? You know,
and it's also when you're out there, not, you know, when you need a hand and nobody gives a shit about what's happening with you, then things start sucking really quick. So
that's what happened to me, because I had a period in my life where I was basically all on my own. I mean, I had nobody. My mother wasn't with me. And it was just like, you know, all of a sudden you're like thankful for anybody that even gives you a smile. My life better, obviously, but the point is, you'd never go back from that. You know, I could never sit there and just be selfish and say, get out of my face. I don't have a dollar for this bomb. It's not going to happen. Because I know.
No, and I think there's two things. I mean, the first thing that I always say is, you know, when all this stuff is over and done with, none of it will matter.
Yeah.
None of this matters. Because we all, and the other thing is we're all working towards the same goal, to die.
Yep.
So if, you know, we're all going to end up in the same place.
Right.
So you can go down and die being a selfish prick, or you can say, you know what, it doesn't matter, because it doesn't. At the end of the day, you know, all this is very small.
Yeah.
You want to be a small person, think in small proportions, really? And it's sad, and people do buy into this nonsense, but that's up to them, too. Like, I'm like, at this point in my life, I'm like, you know what? Cool. You want to roll like that? That's cool. I don't care. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you have to figure that one out with yourself, you know?
True.
Well, whatever you believe in, whatever you know, you'll figure it out. You know, and the metal community is not different than any other community.
Oh, no, not at all.
So,
we're talking metal, so.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of like, you know, let people figure that stuff out. And then people will come to either one or the other conclusion. And people have to do that. But, yeah, I mean, this is a bizarre interview, but it's cool. I like it.
So do you have anything else you want to plug, or a website you want to give to the listeners?
Just check out our Facebook page, official Facebook page. You know, our website is exhumer.de. That's pretty much it, you know, and, you know, thanks for supporting us for all these years, and it's been a pleasure talking to you, Gene, and, you know, I hope we can do this again one day. Just stay tuned. I want to apologize for anybody who was hoping to see us in the fall, but we will come in the spring.
All right.
And definitely bring the fire.
With that, ma'am, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third SM, and I'd love to have you back when you're ready to promote your new album.
You got it, brother.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed our interview with Mem Bunstein and Exhumer. Stay tuned after the close for one last parting shot from the band. Next week on week 23 of Third Eye Cinema, Raleigh, North Carolina, retro traditional metal scene founder Chris Bennett of Widow. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician who'd like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema, brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network. I'm Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
And as promised, there's one last track from the new Exhumer album. This is Vermin of the Sky. If you missed any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Blog Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience.